Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, a complete recovery for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Harav Mir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about two things. I want to speak about the presidential campaign again, the latest news. But first, I want to say something about Israel. Because we've been speaking to you for quite a while about the grave injustice that is done to Jewish heroes in Israel. Jewish heroes are persecuted and imprisoned in Israel solely because of their political beliefs. It is not a free country. It is not a country even with the type of freedoms that we're used to in the United States. Israel is a country where, for your political beliefs, you can be put in prison. And there are people in administrative detention, like the grandson, of course, of Harav Mir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik VeKadosh Livracha, our great leader, his grandson Meir Ettinger, and other Jewish dissidents are being thrown into prison solely because of their political beliefs. We just did a Hebrew video, though, about another injustice that took place. All over Israel, Arab terrorists throw rocks at Jews. Big rocks and boulders are being thrown at Jews. And Jews have been murdered. And Jews have been seriously injured by this. This has been taking place for decades. And nothing is done to stop this. Of course, if we were in power, the police and the soldiers would have shoot-to-kill orders. And we would severely discipline and even prosecute any soldier or any police officer who did not shoot to death Arab terrorists that are throwing rocks at Jews. Any Arab that dares to lift his hand against a Jew should have his hand cut off. And I don't mean that literally. I mean basically that he should be killed. When someone has the chutzpah to try to murder Jews and endanger Jewish lives in the Jewish homeland, and they are enemies, sworn enemies of the Jewish people, as the Arab Muslim Nazis are, the minute they lift their hand against a Jew to endanger Jewish lives, they should be killed. Instead of allowing them to murder Jews, they should be killed. They should be eliminated, and that would be our policy if we were in Israel. Arab terrorists, Arab stone throwers, Arabs who throw rocks at Jews, they would be shot to death, and that would solve the problem. But of course, we have an Israeli government that is anti-Semitic, and that has anti-Semitic policies. And that's not an exaggeration. Let me give you an example, and you tell me if this isn't anti-Semitic. For a whole day, about 9 months ago, a typical day, Arabs were throwing rocks at Jewish women, Jewish children, Jewish soldiers, and the Jewish soldiers ran away. They're under orders to run away when Arabs throw rocks at them. Can you imagine how insane this is? How evil? What a chilul Hashem, what a desecration of God's name this is. So the Jewish soldiers were running away and the Arabs were throwing rocks at them. And of course, this encouraged the Arabs to also throw rocks at Jewish women and children. And so Jews were in danger all over the highways of Israel. The Arabs were throwing rocks at Jews. Noam Federman, the Jewish hero, who had a long-time association with our movement, Noam Federman, the Jewish hero, and his son were riding in a car, and Arabs started throwing rocks at him and his son in the car. So he gets out of the, he stops the car. His life is in danger, his son's life is in danger. When rocks are being thrown at you while you're driving, of course, that puts your life in serious jeopardy. He gets out of the car and he picks up rocks and starts throwing it back. He and his son were throwing rocks back at the Arabs who were attacking them. Attacking them only because they're Jews. Attacking and trying to murder them because they're Jews. And so in self-defense, he started throwing rocks back at the Arabs to survive, to act in self-defense. What happens? None of the Arabs who were throwing rocks at him were arrested. He and his son now were indicted. They handed down an indictment against Noam Federman, the Jewish hero, and his son, for defending themselves, for just throwing rocks back at Arab Nazis who were throwing rocks at them to murder them, God forbid. And so for self-defense, You go to prison in Israel. You're arrested in Israel. In other words, the way the law works in Israel, if you're an Arab Nazi, you can throw rocks at Jews to murder Jews. Soldiers and police will run away from you and allow you to throw rocks at Jews to murder Jews. That's the law in Israel. But if you're a Jew, there's a special law for Arab Nazis and there's a special law for Jews. If you're a Jew, not only are you not allowed to throw rocks at the Arab enemy, you're not even allowed to defend yourself. You're not even allowed to defend yourself when you act in self-defense. The Arab Nazi attacker is not going to be arrested. You're going to be arrested for defending yourself. That's not an anti-Semitic policy. That's not an outrage. That is what has happened to Noam Featherman and his son. Absolutely outrageous. And you have courts that are completely controlled by left-wing judges, by extreme left-wing judges, because Benjamin Netanyahu and the Likud defend the system where only extreme left judges are picked for the Supreme Court. That's the situation we have. If this were happening in the United States or Europe or any other country where only Jews are not allowed to defend themselves, where enemies, Jew killers and enemies of the Jewish people are allowed to throw rocks at them and allowed to murder them, and Jews can't even defend themselves to survive, if this were happening in any other country, we would say that that country is anti-Semitic, justifiably. But it's happening in the Jewish state. Did you ever hear anything so sick, such a sick situation like this? How sick can we get? And that's why JTF is so important, because who else is going to do a video like we did today? We did a Hebrew video today defending Noam Featherman and his son and exposing this. No one else has spoken up and no one else is defending them the way we are. Aren't you glad that you're part of a movement that's standing up and defending what's right and just? Do you agree, and I know the great JTFers do, but those of you who are listening, do you agree that we're not allowed to be silent in the face of this type of injustice? Do you agree that when Noam Featherman and his son try to defend themselves, we have an obligation to speak out when injustice is done against them, when Jews are being led to the slaughter by evil, self-hating traitor leaders? We have an obligation to speak out. We have an obligation to protest. We have an obligation to do everything we can to turn the situation around and to wake the Jewish people up. I don't see other people doing and speaking out like we are. And that's why JTF is so important. On some issues, there are other groups that speak out, but just on issue after issue, there's so many times when we're the only ones to take a stand. And then after we take a stand, sometimes others follow. But on many issues in Israel, at least, we're the only ones to take a stand, the only ones to publicly speak about something. So I think you'll agree that what we're doing is very important. And morally, it's a moral imperative for anyone with a conscience, for anyone who fears God and who believes in justice. It's a moral imperative for us to take a stand and to speak out and not to be silent. Now, in the United States, you know, we've been speaking for quite a while now about the race for president because it's so important. It's so important to the survival of Israel and the Jewish people as well because of the Iranian situation where Iran is arming itself now with hundreds of nuclear bombs, God forbid. The presidential election may be our last chance to stop that because only military airstrikes against the Iranian program will stop it. And so we've been heavily focused on the presidential campaign in the United States in terms of our English language movement. And you know, there was another poll that came out. This was the Des Moines Register poll. The Des Moines Register is the biggest newspaper in Iowa. They came out with a poll together with Bloomberg News. Yeah, that's Mike Bloomberg's news agency. They did a poll and they found that Donald Trump gets 23% in Iowa. Iowa being the first state that's going to vote, so it's very, very important, critically important. Donald Trump gets 23%, and he's only leading by 5 points now, which is less than in the other polls. So let's hope that this is the beginning of a trend. But who's in second place? Ben Carson, the black phony who claims to be a black conservative, but who says his goal is the same as Al Sharpton's goal, and who makes excuses for black violence, and who supported abortion. and who used body parts in doing a research paper that he wrote about, and in research, laboratory research that he did as a doctor. So this guy is not to be trusted. Anyone who trusts Ben Carson is insane. First of all, he's completely unqualified to be president, and he's not to be trusted. He's in second place with 18% of the vote. And people are so insane. Even the Republicans are insane. They're all insane. Donald Trump, 23%. Ben Carson, 18%. Now, tied for third place. There are two candidates who are in third place in the poll. Ted Cruz and Scott Walker are tied for third place. Each of them gets 8% of the vote. So Ted Cruz is in third place now. But with his 8%, of course, he's behind Trump and Carson. Is it possible for Ted Cruz to go from third place to winning Iowa? It is possible. It is possible. Let's hope that things fall in place for him. Let's hope something good happens. He's fighting an uphill battle, but it's not hopeless. Maybe, God willing, things can fall in place for him. There are certain things coming up that might work in his favor. One of them is that he's on September 9th, he's going to be having a rally, and he's invited Donald Trump to the rally. I think the real reason he invited Donald Trump, aside from the fact that he wants to get all of Trump's supporters, you know, him speaking and Trump speaking, I hope people will see that he's a much better speaker than Donald Trump. And so he's doing this. I think it was a clever move, and he also knows that the media only covers Donald Trump. The media does not give coverage to any of the other candidates. The media is deliberately only covering Donald Trump, which is terrible disgrace, and it should show, Republicans should understand what's going on here. The media is dictating who their candidate should be, just like they did with John McCain, just like they did with Mitt Romney. It was the media that pushed those candidates, and the stupid Republicans went along with the media. But anyway, the media is only covering Donald Trump, and no one's even suspicious about this. Media ignores all the other candidates. Anyway, in order to grab some of that media attention, and in order to get some of Trump's supporters, I think Ted Cruz cleverly decided to invite Donald Trump to speak at this rally that Ted Cruz is organizing against the Iran nuclear bomb-making deal that will pave the way for Iranian nuclear bombs, God forbid. Ted Cruz has been leading the most active campaign against this, nonstop. I mean, you go to his site, he's fighting this all the way. I mean, he's trying very hard to stop this. There's no question. He is the best candidate on this issue. He's the one candidate that says, this is the number one threat to U.S. national security. Scott Walker and all these other candidates say the number one threat is ISIS, what they call ISIS, the Islamic State terrorists, which is nonsense. The Islamic State terrorists are not close to building nuclear bombs. If Iran gets nuclear bombs, that's a much greater threat, 1,000 times worse. And Ted Cruz is the only candidate with the common sense and the courage to stand up and tell the truth on this issue. So we have an obligation to support him. September 9th, he's going to have this rally. Let's hope this gives him a boost. In addition to that, there are other things involving Ted Cruz that could potentially give him a boost. He's going to lead a campaign to stop funding for Planned Parenthood, and it could lead to a government shutdown. If he plays the most prominent role in that campaign, that could give him a great deal of attention, Ted Cruz. So let's hope that Ted Cruz gets a lot of attention on the campaign to stop the murderous Nazi group Planned Parenthood from being funded. And by the way, if you might say Nazi, you're calling them Nazis, Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, was a Nazi. And many Planned Parenthood, the leaders, they had the same philosophy as the Nazis. And we see their behavior, you know, using body parts of babies. Their behavior is just criminal. In any event, Ted Cruz, on that moral issue, is also leading the campaign. And so he may get a lot of attention on that issue. And that is an issue where the vast majority of Republicans agree with Ted Cruz, and the vast majority, and certainly conservatives, agree with him. Donald Trump, of course, made the notorious statement that he thinks Planned Parenthood should continue to get funding because he says he thinks they do a lot of good work. Oh, what a phony. And so-called conservatives and people who are pro-life are supporting this guy, Donald Trump. It's unbelievable. But anyway, Ted Cruz may get attention on the Planned Parenthood issue, may get attention with his rally against the Iran nuclear bomb-making program and against the deal that Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Kerry negotiated over the years with Iran. So Ted Cruz may be getting a lot of attention soon, hopefully, God willing. And we have the debates coming up, and we all know that Ted Cruz is a very good debater. And by the way, I don't think Donald Trump is a good debater. I think he was terrible in that debate that he had. But the media were the only ones that they gave attention to. They gave all their attention to Donald Trump, and so he came out saying, "Oh, you see, I won the debate." If he's the only candidate that gets any attention, and if there are 17 candidates in the race, and the public only pays attention to him, of course he's going to have a plurality of voters always saying that he wins, even though he didn't win. He was the worst. He was terrible in that debate. I hope eventually the debates, the anti-Iran nuclear rally that Ted Cruz is planning, and the Planned Parenthood funding, I'm hoping all of this gives Ted Cruz finally a chance, because the media is deliberately blacking him out and trying to ignore him. Let's hope that he has a breakthrough, despite the fact that the media is treating him like this, and despite the fact that he's not yet using up his money, and he's raised more money than the other candidates. I'm talking about Ted Cruz. He has raised a good amount of money. Despite the fact that he is not yet using his money up, he's not using his money up yet at this early stage, because he wants to save it for when it's crucial. And despite the fact that he's being blacklisted by the media, he's in third place in Iowa. So, is there a chance that he can make a breakthrough? There is a chance. Let's hope and pray that he does. And we're going to, of course, you know, with our videos and our campaign, we're going to do everything we can to help him. And we really, on YouTube and elsewhere, we are the Jewish voice for Ted Cruz. We are his Jewish voice. And I hope we continue to be his Jewish voice. The evangelical, he has a lot of evangelical Christian supporters. He has a lot of Tea Party supporters. We want to make sure he has a strong Jewish level of support as well. So we're doing everything we can to promote him. I think you know how important our mission is, what we're trying to do. We're trying to wake the Jews of Israel up. We're trying to defend Jewish heroes like Noam Federman in Israel. We're trying to help Ted Cruz in his campaign for the presidency because of the importance for America, for Israel, for the world, of stopping a nuclear Iran and the other issues that Ted Cruz raises. I think you agree with us that this is very important, because you, our fellow JTFers, do understand the significance of these issues. And so you know that we have to work together as a team. Help us promote our Hebrew and English videos on Facebook, on YouTube, Twitter, everywhere you can. Help us promote these videos. By the way, thankfully we have a nice Twitter account that one of our great JTFers opened. We have a nice Twitter account with followers and everything else, and it's actually prominently listed in the search engines. But help us promote our Hebrew and English videos. Also, go to the great news page that Shlomo has created, the great English news page. If you speak Hebrew, go to the great Hebrew news page as well. And be active on our news pages. Comment on our news pages. And finally, of course, we need your financial support. It's very, very important, because that's, if only we had real financial support. There's no question. We've proven already. We proved to you on Facebook when we got 27,000 likes in several months. And that's on a Hebrew page in a small country like Israel. We prove that we have mass appeal if only we have a chance, if only we get a chance. So the more support we get, the better our chance, the better our chance of making a difference. Every check, every money order, every cash donation, it makes a difference. We need your help. The stronger we get, the better it is for Israel, for the Jewish people, and the better it is for those who want to save America from the terrible policies of the left and the phony right. So, of course, we God bless the wonderful JTFers who are sending checks, money orders, cash donations to our post office box. If you want to do it that way, that is very, very helpful to us. God bless you. Or, for convenience sake, if you prefer to do it online with your credit card, very easy and convenient to do it through PayPal. Takes a few minutes. You just go to the donate button on the Hebrew main page. The Hebrew main page is hayamin.org. You go to hayamin.org, and on top, there's a donate button. And in several minutes, you can very conveniently donate to us through PayPal. It makes no difference whether you do it online or whether you do it through the mail. It makes no difference whatsoever. It's something that benefits the cause and strengthens us and enables us to reach more people and to be more effective. So let's fight together as a team, and let's hope that, God willing, we can make a difference. I think we're making a difference, but I want to make a much bigger difference, and we need to make a much bigger difference. Let's hope we can make a difference, because this is such a critical time and so much is at stake. Let's go now to our questions and our comments from our great JTFers. This is going to take me a second. I just have to move over here. I just have to move over here to be able to see the screen, and I hope you can hear me just as well with my moving over here. And we start out with Yamach Shmoda Islam, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, what are your thoughts on the following people? And then there's four people here. They're all rap and hip-hop people. The first person that Yamach Shmoda Islam asks about is Outkast. Well, actually, Outkast is two people. Outkast are ignorant, filthy, foul-mouthed hip-hop savages. It's the only thing I can say about them. They're obscene, filthy-mouthed savages. And they have nothing positive to contribute to society. And then Yamach Shmoda asks about MC Hammer. MC Hammer is another hip-hop, rap, garbage, so-called singer. And I think the effect of his music is again, decadent. It causes the decay of society. It's part of this terrible culture that has a corrosive effect on society. And then Missy Elliott is a female rapper. Also degenerate so-called music. Terrible. It's terrible. All the rappers, hip-hop, that whole culture has a corrosive effect on society. Morally, culturally, it's garbage, and it destroys society. And finally, Lex Luger, the rapper, not the wrestler. Okay, and the reason is because there is a wrestler called Lex Luger, and the rapper took his name, I think, because of the wrestler. I think he named himself after the wrestler. Lex Luger is a hip-hop imbecile. Another hip-hop imbecile. Thank you, Yamach Shmoda Islam. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of Jimmy Carter having cancer? Can you curse him? Thanks, keep up the good work, unquote. Well, of course, Baruch Hashem, when evil monsters like Jimmy Carter get cancer or anything bad happens to them, we're supposed to be joyous that there's some justice here because of all the terrible things that he's done to the world. Unfortunately, though, he lived to the age of 90. He's almost 91. So he's lived a long time, and that means we're being punished with him living a long time. That's a punishment. When evil people live long lives, that's a punishment. And so that says something about this generation. But of course, the more quickly he leaves this world, the better. Yimach Shmova Zichro Shem Reshaim Yerkav, which means may his name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. Thank you, Joe. And we go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, I meant Ron Paul, not Rand, in 2012, unquote. Well, I think Ron Paul would have been a disastrous candidate. Ron Paul is nuts. He doesn't make any sense, and he's, you know, he makes excuses for Al-Qaeda, makes excuses for all the Muslim terrorists. He would have been a catastrophic candidate. Anyway, Lewinsky Stinks now writes, how would the following Romney alternatives have done against BHO, against Barack Hussein Obama? Gingrich, Pawlenty, Perry, Kaine. Okay. Gingrich, I think Newt Gingrich unfortunately proved that he's a very erratic and poor candidate. He's not a good candidate. He had that debate with Mitt Romney in Florida during the Florida primary when he was leading. He was already the front runner because he got a lot of momentum in South Carolina from his debate in South Carolina. He won in South Carolina. So he became the front runner, and Mitt Romney absolutely beat him hands down in the debate. He was terrible. Gingrich became terrible in the debate. He was unable to handle being attacked. So he's not an effective candidate. Pawlenty is very, very boring. He was the governor of Minnesota, terrible candidate. Sort of like Scott Walker. Just a boring, dull, uninspiring person with no leadership qualities. The problem with Rick Perry is that he has no brains. That's one of his many. He's also a phony, but he has no brains. And one thing Donald Trump said that was true, he's wearing glasses now to try to look more intelligent. But it doesn't work. And Kane was a joke. Just a complete joke. A complete farce. So all of them would have been terrible. They would have been even worse than Mitt Romney against Obama. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, "Why was Bachman unelectable in your opinion?" Unquote. I like Michelle Bachman. I would have loved to have her as President of the United States. But I don't think she could have won. Because she just isn't taken seriously as a candidate. I whatever the reason is, the majority of American people don't take her seriously. When people see her on television, they see her speaking, they don't take her seriously. I don't agree with them, but they don't. It's just a fact. She came in last place in the Iowa caucuses. I think it was six or seven candidates, and she came in dead last. I don't remember how many candidates, but I know she came in last. Her campaign was a catastrophe. Because people don't take her seriously. Lewinsky Stinks now asks, and I quote, "Could Donald Trump be Gog?" Unquote. No, I don't think that Donald Trump could be. First of all, Gog and Magog, they represent a nation that will lead a worldwide coalition against Israel. They have to be anti-Jewish. They have to be anti-Israel. And I don't like Donald Trump. I think he is a phony. And I don't like what his candidacy represents. But I don't see any indication that he's anti-Semitic. Even though I don't like his position on Iran, that he says he wouldn't rip up the treaty, I don't see any indication that that's because he's anti-Israel or anti-Semitic. And Gog and Magog will be anti-Israel and will be anti-Semitic. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "Please respond to this statement from Encyclopedia Judaica, often quoted by mudslimes. The extramarital intercourse of a married man is not per se a crime in biblical or later Jewish law. This distinction stems from the economic aspect of Israelite marriage. The wife was the husband's possession, and adultery constituted a violation of the husband's exclusive right to her. The wife, as the husband's possession, had no such right to him," unquote. Well, I mean, this is just all complete nonsense, and it's anti-religious propaganda. And you see how what these self-hating Jews write is immediately grabbed and exploited by Muslims and Nazis and other enemies of the Jewish people. You know, when they write this nonsense and write things that do not reflect what Judaism stands for, they're immediately quoted by all the Muslims and all the Nazis and all the enemies of the Jewish people. So, something like Encyclopedia Judaica, which is a self-hating book, they do tremendous harm. They do tremendous harm. The fact is, obviously, a husband is not permitted to go out and cheat on his wife. Even when you're not married, fornication, you're not allowed to go out. A Jewish man is not allowed to go out and have sex before marriage from someone he's not married to. He's not allowed to go out and do that. So if he's not allowed to do it when he's not married, how much more so when he is? So this is just, it's absurd. It's completely absurd. Thank you, Smash Islam. We go now to Israel Chai, who writes, and I quote, "Comment on cool, quote-unquote, Puma clothes." Well, you know, all of these clothes with labels that make the clothes more expensive, I never understood the stupidity of people who want a label on their clothing. You know, if you look at Puma clothes, there are clothes that they make the same thing that other people make without the label. you can get, or you can get something very similar without the label and pay much less. Why pay extra money just because there's a label? It's absurd. It's complete. They really are making fools out of the people that buy things because there's a label on it. Making complete fools out of these people. Now, it's true that I am no connoisseur of fancy clothes. As you can see from the videos I do, and anyone who's ever met me, I'm not, I don't have fancy clothes. I'm not a rich person. But still, the absurdity of this is something that just is beyond me, frankly, when I see this. Israel Chai now writes, "What is the unrest in Lebanon about?" Unquote. Well, the unrest in Lebanon is because Muslims are always murdering each other. Shiites murdering Sunnis and vice versa. And in Lebanon you have a Christian minority that they've always wanted to exterminate. Everybody's murdering everybody. Everybody's killing and slaughtering everybody in Lebanon. And this has been going on for decades. You're dealing with savages. And anyone who says there can be peace with the Arab world, Lebanon is what the Arab world is all about. That's what happens. That's what happens among Arabs. And the minute that Israel makes concessions, when Israel shows weakness and makes concessions, the Arabs view this as weakness and take advantage and exploit it, and it leads to more bloodshed and more war and more terrorism and more unnecessary murder. That's what every concession that Israel makes to the Arabs or makes to the Iranians, every concession that Israel makes, this is what it always leads to. And when I say making concessions to the Iranians, the fact that they don't attack and destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program is the ultimate concession. So the only way to prevent war is peace through strength. That's the only way. And even then, you can't prevent war completely because the Arab world is committed to Israel's destruction. But you can deter a great deal of violence and a great deal of tragic consequences if you're strong enough. Israel Chai now writes, "Who are Rabbi Kahana's heroes?" Unquote. Well, the heroes of Rabbi Kahana, you can clearly see from his writing, he had many Jewish heroes in the Bible, for instance, obviously, the heroes of the Bible. Abraham Avinu, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, David HaMelech, King David. Rabbi Kahana wrote about all of these people repeatedly, and they were clearly his heroes. And of course, the Maccabees during Chanukah, and Mordechai HaYehudi, and Esther HaMalka, you know, Mordechai and Queen Esther during the Megillat Esther, for the Purim holiday. All of those were heroes of Rabbi Kahana. And in more recent history, the heroic freedom fighters of Ha'irgun Hatzvayi HaLeumi, Etzel, and the Stern Group, the two groups that were the underground freedom fighters that blew the British out of the land of Israel and liberated the land of Israel, they were Rabbi Kahana's heroes as well. So Rabbi Kahana, who himself was a great hero, certainly look toward heroic figures in Jewish history, and those are just some of them. Israel Chai now writes, "Name some heroes alive now and why they are. Thank you." We certainly have heroes today, like Noam Federman, whom I spoke about in my opening, and like Meir Ettinger, the grandson of Rabbi Kahana, and the Hilltop Youth, and the heroic Jews that are fighting to prevent Israel from committing national suicide and fighting to wake the Jewish people up. Those are all heroes to the Jewish people. People who fight to save Jewish lives, people who fight to prevent Israel from committing suicide, people who fight for Torah principles and what Hashem commands us to do, and are willing to sacrifice, and are willing to sit in prison, and are willing to risk their lives, and are willing to take sometimes unpopular stands when necessary. Those are the heroes of our generation and of every generation. Thank you very much, Israel Chai. And we go now to angry Chinese Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Fair-minded centrist Israeli archaeologist Israel Finkelstein Finkelstein. In Hebrew we call him Finkelstein, and in English it's Finkelstein. Objective leftist hack or other. Well, you know, Rabbi Kahana often spoke about the Jewish disease of objectivity. Jews always want to be objective. And that means when they meet their Nazi mass murderers, they have to be objective. They can't be against anybody. They have to be objective. It's always on the one hand, but then again on the other hand. We are not supposed to be objective, quote-unquote, or open-minded when we meet Adolf Hitler. I mean, there's certain times when you have to take a stand and you say, I am against this or I am for this. People who don't take a stand, people who always want to see the other side, even if the other side is pure evil and monstrous cruelty, and who, and in effect then wind up justifying the other side and wind up not fighting against injustice, these people bring tragedy to the world and are a catastrophe for the world. Israel Finkelstein is an archaeologist who criticizes the Bible and speaks about how the biblical account is not true, and he's finding archaeological proofs. He's so full of crap. He's such a phony, cowardly piece of garbage. I can't stand Jews like him. I can't stand Jews that are trying to prove how fair and objective they are and bend over backwards to all of our enemies. I despise people like him. I despise people like him. And for a Jew to say that the Bible is wrong is treason. Any Jew that says that is treasonous. God is going to be wrong? You mean God doesn't give us a book that tells us what our purpose in this world is? God is wrong? I mean, the arrogance and the insanity is just beyond belief. The Bible, the Tanakh, is perfect. It is the word of God. There may be people who don't understand what it means and who don't understand the deeper meaning of everything, but it is perfect and it is the word of God. And the Torah is perfect in the word of God. And Jews like this creature who go around contradicting the Bible and contradicting the Torah, the arrogance, their arrogance is only exceeded by their ignorance, and their ignorance is of course appalling. So, you know, I don't like Jews that have the disease of objectivity. I like Jews that take a stand and that want to make this a better world and that are moral people and fight for what's morally right. Those are the type of Jews that I admire. Thank you, angry Chinese Kahanist. And we go now to Uncle Bourbon, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim. Why do feminists cut their hair short? Why do they want to look like men despite hating men?" Unquote. That's a great question. And of course, the feminists do this because the vast majority of feminists are lesbians. And they do hate men. And it's very strange because they do want to look like men. Many of them want to look like men. And yet they hate men. Now, I'm not saying all lesbians want to look like men. But this is, you know, I don't know what all the reasons are for all the crazy things these people do. You know, obviously, lesbianism and same-sex attraction is a mental illness. So I can't understand all of the logic and the reasoning behind the things they do. But obviously, it's sick, and obviously, it's not normal. And feminism is not normal, and lesbianism is not normal. These are examples of mentally ill behavior. You know, these philosophies are the product of deranged minds. These are deranged people and deranged minds. And we have to, of course, counter this with the truth. We're obligated to tell the truth. Thank you, Uncle Bourbon. We go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what should the penalty be for Paris-trained terrorists?" Unquote. Well, I think all Islamic terrorists should be executed. All of them should be executed. Their goal is to murder as many innocent people as possible. They should get what they want to do to innocent people should happen to them. That's the only true justice. Hiram now writes, "Please discuss Jewish contributions to Renaissance and Enlightenment in medieval Europe." Unquote. Well, the Jews were the ones who brought morality to Europe. Not only in the medieval time, not only in the Dark Ages and in the and in the Renaissance period, and all throughout European history, whatever morals existed in Europe came from the Jews. Before the Jews came to Europe, Europe was barbaric and bloodthirsty. Look at the Roman Empire. Look at the northern parts of Europe before the Romans conquered there. The barbarism, the pagan cruelty, and the monstrous beliefs. So the Jews introduced morality to Europe. Of course, the Europeans never forgave them for it. They never liked Jewish morals, and they never liked biblical morals, which is why we had a Holocaust and crusades and inquisitions and expulsions and blood libels and all the other horrible things that accompanied the Jewish presence in Europe for 2,000 years. But the most important thing, the two most important things that the Jews gave to Europe is morality is one of them, and even more importantly, the Jews gave to Europe a chance, an opportunity, to have the most important thing anybody can have in this world, which is belief in God and understanding God. We're in this world to believe in God, understand God, and follow His commandments. That's why we're in this world. That is the most important thing we can do in life. That's our purpose in life. Not only for ourselves, not only that we should understand, but also that we should spread this, and that everybody should understand and believe in God and follow God's laws and God's morals. And the Jews gave Europe a chance. They gave Europe a chance to do that. The vast majority of Europeans always rejected that message, but the Jews gave them a chance to do that. That's the greatest Jewish contribution to Europe in all periods of time. Thank you, Chiram. We go now to Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, what do you think of reports that Bill Clinton encouraged Donald Trump to run? Thank you, unquote. Oh, yeah, it did happen. I mean, Bill Clinton called Donald Trump shortly before he ran, because Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, obviously they're very happy with Donald Trump running. Of course, Donald Trump is not electable. He would be a disastrous Republican nominee. The dream of the Clintons would be to run against Donald Trump. That would be a dream come true for them. And of course, even if he doesn't win the nomination, he has a very disruptive impact on the Republican Party. So, of course, the Clintons wanted him to run, and of course they encouraged him to run. Thank you, Kalman. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, please comment on the encounter I had with my congressman, Jan Schakowsky, at her office last week, unquote. Well, Chicago Jew did something very noble and very nice. There was a pro-Iranian demonstration, and a demonstration in favor of the Iranian nuclear agreement that Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Kerry concluded with the Iranian Muslim Nazi terrorist regime. There was a demonstration in favor of this evil agreement at the office of Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. Jan Schakowsky is a congresswoman from Illinois. And they had this demonstration, about 20 people attended the demonstration, and the congresswoman herself came to the demonstration at the end. She came, or after about 10 minutes, I think, she came to the demonstration. And Chicago Jew started screaming at her and telling her that she's a self-hating Jew. I don't know if he screamed at her, but he told her, he in effect was heckling her and said, you're a self-hating Jew and you support Israeli national suicide. And he told her the truth. I mean, he was really said things to her that were very truthful and important. And she said, how dare you? And you know, the 20 people, the 20 animals that were at her so-called demonstration, they all started booing him until finally two people in plain clothes came up to him and removed him from the demonstration. And then a uniformed police officer came and asked him for his identification, and they moved him away. But still, you know, Chicago Jew, he wasn't arrested in the end, but he told the truth. He spoke out and he told the truth. Congratulations, Chicago Jew. That's, you deserve credit for speaking out and for telling the truth. Congratulations. We, as we say in Hebrew, Yishar Koach. Yishar Koach means more power to you. Okay, now we go to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, Cruz and Trump to hold rally against Iran deal in D.C. Should we join them, unquote. Yes, if people want to join them, I see no reason why you shouldn't. I think the rally is a good idea. Ted Cruz is organizing it. And it's a rally to really alert people as to what this deal is about and to alert people as to the danger of the Iranian nuclear bomb-making program. So yes, if people want to go, I think it is a good rally. Dr. Dan now writes, 2, is Ted Cruz running out of money for his campaign, unquote. No. No, he's not. He actually raised more money than anyone other than Jeb Bush. He raised over $50 million, and he is not spending that money. He's not spending a lot of that money yet. So, no, he's not running. His campaign is not in trouble. There are campaigns that are in trouble. But his campaign is not. No, thank God he, Baruch Hashem, thank God he has money in the bank, and he is going to use that money, hopefully at the right moment, to assist him in the upcoming contests in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and so on. Dr. Dan now writes, 3, Dvar Torah. Okay. Dvar Torah means to discuss something that's in the Torah. Why not discuss this week's parasha? This week's parasha is this week's Torah portion. And this week's parasha is Parashat Ki Tetzeh. One of the commandments in this week's parasha is to build a Ma'akeh Lagag. Ma'akeh Lagag is like a banister or a rail on the roof. If you have a house and you have a roof, you want to build a banister, or you want to build a rail on the roof. And why do you want to do that? Because if somebody goes to the roof, even though people don't go to the roof frequently, if somebody happens to go to the roof, you don't want them to fall and get killed. And interestingly enough, today, when we're doing this show, today, the same week we have this parasha and this commandment in the parasha, someone was in fact killed. I think it was in Atlanta at a baseball game. They fell because there was not an adequate rail there, not an adequate banister or rail to protect them, so they actually fell. So this is a serious issue. You are obligated to think about the safety of people. If you have a roof, you have a house, you have to think about the safety of people. You have to think about the safety of the public. That's part of our obligations as Torah Jews. We have an obligation to care about what happens to other people. Because we're in this world not just for ourselves and not even just for our family and our loved ones. We should be concerned about ourselves and our own safety. We should be concerned certainly about the safety of our loved ones and our family. We also should be concerned about the safety of other people as well. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go now to Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, your thoughts on the Ahmadiyya Mosque in Jamaica Estates. Wasn't that a synagogue once upon a time? What happened? Unquote. Well, I'm not familiar with that mosque, but I'm not surprised if a synagogue turned into a mosque. Because there are so many Muslims moving into Queens and moving into the United States. I mean, it's an invasion. There are so many Muslims coming in. And, you know, the fact that they're coming into Jamaica States really says something about the Muslim world, how we're enriching the Muslim world with all the oil sales and all the other crazy things we're doing. Because Jamaica States, you have to be a millionaire to live in Jamaica States. You don't have poor people, and you don't have middle class in Jamaica States. No real middle class. You've got to be at least upper middle class to wealthy to live in Jamaica States. So the fact that you have Muslims moving into a wealthy neighborhood like that, like Jamaica States, I think, tells us that not only do we have an invasion taking place here from Muslims from the third world coming into the U.S., but a lot of them are coming in with a lot of money. It's really incredible. It's really incredible how self-destructive policies of the West are enriching our enemies and really are leading to the strengthening of the forces of evil in the world. Thank you, Gematria. And we go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Please list the 10 most evil things the Israeli government did since 1967. List them in order, starting with the worst," unquote. Well, Binyamin, it's very hard for me to list them in order. I'll try to list 10 things. I could easily come up with more than 10 things. I'll try to list 10 really bad things that the Israeli government has done since 1967, since the 1967 Six-Day War. But to list them in order would be very hard for me to do at this point, because I have to start thinking, is this worse than that? That would be difficult for me to do. Let me just list them, not necessarily in order, but let me just list 10 terrible things. 1, allowing the Arabs to remain in the land of Israel. Israel could have expelled all the Arabs in the 1967 Six-Day War easily. Millions of Arabs just could have been thrown out of the country and we wouldn't have had the problems that we have. And at that time, the world would have agreed and would have supported Israel and would have said, we understand why you're doing this, because the Arabs were openly saying they're going to destroy Israel and destroy the Jews. Nobody questioned that in 1967. And the world was very sympathetic to Israel at that point. So that would have been perfect time to just do that very quickly. So allowing the Arabs to remain is number 1. Number 2, the Temple Mount, Har HaBayit, handing over the keys, Moshe Dayan, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, may his name be obliterated, this evil individual who became the defense minister of Israel. The Waqf, the Arab Waqf, immediately came with trembling hands, wanted to hand over the keys to the Temple Mount to the Jews. Oh, please take it. They were terrified of the Jews. And Moshe Dayan handed it back to them, said, no, you're still in charge. You can stay in charge of the Temple Mount. What an evil, treasonous thing to do. What a self-hating, vile thing to do. That's the second thing. Third, not annexing Judea, Samaria, the Golan Heights, the Sinai. They should have immediately annexed all the territories that were liberated in 1967. That's the third thing. The fourth thing, not massively settling all the territories. Immediately they should have started an immediate program for massive new settlements in Judea, Samaria, Gaza, Sinai, and the Golan. They didn't do that. Number 5, not giving Jewish education to Jewish children, continuing the brainwashing of Jewish children in the Israeli education system and not giving them a Jewish education. Number 6, accepting the existence of a so-called Palestinian people in Palestine. There is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, and accepting this existence is the worst propaganda mistake Israel can make. Number 7, retreating from the entire Sinai. The Sinai was 3 times the size of the rest of the state of Israel. 75% of the land was just handed over in exchange for a worthless piece of paper with Egypt. Menachem Begin and the Likud did this. It was a terrible, horrific tragedy that we gave up the Sinai, which would have given Israel, first of all, strategic death. Israel was not small with the Sinai anymore. Was no longer a tiny country. It would have given Israel strategic depth. It's part of the land of Israel. It's part of the sacred land of Israel, so it's a terrible sin to give it up. That's the most important reason. Israel would have had massive oil reserves, billions of dollars in oil. They would have been making huge oil profits in the Sinai. It was just such an insane thing to do. Begin just gave it up in exchange for a worthless piece of paper. I think that was number 7. 8. Retreating in Judea and Samaria under the Oslo agreements, handing over huge portions of Judea and Samaria to the PLO terrorist Nazis. 9. The Gaza retreat and the expulsion in Gush Katif. What a horrific act that was. 10. Allowing hundreds of thousands of third world illegal aliens to come flooding into Israel from all over the third world, from Africa, from Asia, from all over the world, just to flood into Israel and destroy the Jewish character of the state, so that now South Tel Aviv is now like 80% non-Jewish, with mostly savages from Africa, people from all over the third world flooding in. 80% of South Tel Aviv, the biggest city in Israel, 80% is not Jewish now. I mean, the Jewish character of the country is being destroyed. So those are the 10 things that I could think of that were horrific things that the Israeli government did. I know they're not in perfect order, but those are 10 horrific things that were done. Thank you very much, Binyamin. And we go now to Mr. VSS, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom, please educate, inform, and enlighten about the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising," unquote. Well, the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was an uprising that took place when the Jews in Warsaw finally realized that the German Nazis were seeking to exterminate the entire Jewish people and finally decided to fight back. The Jews had the most primitive arms, very, very primitive weapons that they, most of the weapons that they had, they made themselves. Fire bombs and primitive weapons that they created. They were starving. They were practically unarmed. And they finally fought heroically against the German Nazis. How many German Nazi soldiers were killed in the end, I don't know. But the tragedy is over 50,000 Jews that were left in the Warsaw Ghetto were murdered in the end or sent to Nazi concentration camps. Whether several dozen German soldiers were killed or whether it was several hundred, there's a dispute about that, I don't know. But the fact is, the Jews did fight back. If the Jews, here are a couple of lessons here. The first lesson is the Jews should have been in Israel. Only when we have our own country and our own army can we fight back and survive. That's the first lesson. The second lesson is look at the sinat chinam, the needless hatred among Jews. The Jewish leftists, who were the majority in the Warsaw Ghetto at that point, the Jewish leftists refused to fight with the Jabotinsky Jews. The Jabotinsky Jews, who knew that there was going to be a Holocaust and who armed themselves, who had a lot of weaponry because they went around trying to get weapons and they went around doing the things that Jews should have been doing to prepare. The Jabotinsky Jews had to fight on their own, and the Jewish leftists would not fight with them, even as the Nazis were coming to exterminate, the German Nazis were coming to exterminate everybody, still in fighting, even as they were about to be completely exterminated, they wouldn't stop the infighting, which shows how the left is such a sick cancer. It's like a cancer in the body of the Jewish people. Sick, evil, Jew-hating Jews. So those are some of the lessons we learn. The Jews did fight back heroically at that point and bravely. And if all the 6 million Jews had fought back against the Nazis, and if all the 6 million Jews who were murdered had been well armed, do you really think the results of the Holocaust would have been the same? Of course not. Of course not. But the Jews did not listen to Jabotinsky, who warned them this was coming. They ignored him. They said he was crazy. Just like they don't listen when people warn them about the dangers they face today. It's tragic. Let's hope that this time, at least, we can convince the Jews to finally listen and finally wake up before it's too late. Thank you, Mr. VSS. We go now to Sparky, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim. I recall hearing that in Judaism, being kind to animals is a special mitzvah because animals can never repay you. Is that correct?" Unquote. Well, there is a mitzvah. It is one of the mitzvot, one of the commandments. Tzar ba'alei chayim means bringing sorrow to animals. And the main reason we don't want to bring sorrow to animals is because these are creatures that God created. We're not allowed to bring sorrow to creatures that God created. We have to be kind to animals. That doesn't mean that Judaism forbids people from eating meat. People are able to eat meat. But when they do, The slaughter has to be a humane slaughter. The animal has to be killed instantly with a very sharp knife, and the person, the shochet, the person who's doing the slaughter, has to know how to cut in a way which, with the death of the animal, will be almost instant. And in kosher slaughter, it is almost instant. It's very, very important that we be kind to God's creatures, that we try to be kind to God's creatures. It also doesn't mean that we don't defend ourselves. If animals come to attack us, you have to defend yourself. And, because some people go crazy with this. I mean, there's some people who love animals more than they love human beings. Obviously, if there's a choice between human lives and animal lives come first. Which is why those who say that you can't experiment on rats in a laboratory in order to try to cure cancer or try to cure other diseases, that's absurd. Human lives are vastly more important. But that doesn't mean that we should be cruel to animals. We should be kind to animals, and that is indeed a mitzvah in the Torah. Thank you, Sparky. And now, Black Sabbath writes, and I quote, one, Inglourious Basterds is a 2009 film by Quentin Tarantino, where Jews took revenge on Nazi soldiers, unquote. Yeah, I'm not familiar with the film. I don't know really what to say about it. As you know, some of these films that are supposed to be pro-Jewish really aren't. And then, you know, but it's possible that this is a good film. I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I just can't say. Black Sabbath now writes, two, please discuss Golda Meir, unquote. Golda Meir was an evil woman. She was the Prime Minister of Israel, and she was evil, and American Jews worshipped her. But she called upon the Jews in the land of Israel to turn in Jewish freedom fighters in the Jewish underground organizations from Etzel, which is the Irgun, and the Stern Group. These two Jewish underground organizations, she said that Jews should turn them into the British so that they could be hanged by the British. You know, we have a prayer against informers. V'lemal shenim al tehi tikva. To the informers may there be no hope. And there's a prayer where we curse informers three times a day. Golda Meir, like David Ben-Gurion, was a traitor. She was an informer. And she, again, called upon Jews to rat out their Jewish heroes. If there's one thing I hate, it's evil Jewish pigs who turn in their fellow Jews and who, especially, who stab in the back the Jewish heroes that are fighting to save the Jewish people. I hate when people do that now in the land of Israel, now to Jewish heroes like Noam Federman and Meir Ettinger and the other people we've mentioned. I despise when they did it to Rabbi Kahana, when they did it to those of us fighting in the JDL. And Golda Meir wanted to do it to the Jews in Etzel and the Stern Group, and they did. And they did. They did turn in Jews to the British. They ratted on Jews. They snitched on their fellow Jews. And this was at a time when these Jews were fighting during the Holocaust in order to save the Jews from complete extermination. Now, not only did she do that in the 1940s to Jewish heroes, later when she became prime minister, we saw in the Yom Kippur War nearly 3,000 Jewish soldiers were murdered unnecessarily because she wouldn't strike first. She gave in to Henry Kissinger's pressure and Richard Nixon's pressure not to strike first. She created a situation where Jews, thousands of Jews, were murdered because she wanted to prove to the world that Israel doesn't strike first, that Israel's the one that was attacked. As if this impressed the world. The world condemned Israel just as much, in fact, even more, because of this weakness. But this is the mentality. This was the mentality of this disgusting woman. She was a traitor to the Jewish people. Thank you, Black Sabbath. We go now to PMN, who writes, and I quote, "Is the media remake of so many white films with black leads some central leftist agenda or simply a response to the wants of their audiences?" Unquote. No, I think it is an agenda. I think it's an agenda to put down white people and turn blacks into... They're such heroes in Hollywood now. They become like the gods, the new gods of America. Blacks can do no wrong. They're always the good guys. They're always the brilliant people. They're always the best doctors, the best lawyers, the most noble people. Even when they're criminals, they're good criminals. They're the noble criminals that you have to admire in the movies or on television. This is non-stop propaganda. Non-stop. And this type of evil behavior, this is why Barack Hussein Obama was able to get elected president, because many Americans literally now worship black people. Worship the most ignorant, primitive, hateful group of Americans, and they're being worshipped. And again, I have nothing against them because of the color of their skin. I don't care about the color of their skin. The color of their skin is completely irrelevant to me. And you do have black people, like Pastor Manning, for instance. You do have black people who are noble people, who happen to be good people. But the leadership and the main leaders of blacks and the vast majority of blacks have chosen to be hateful, jealous, lazy people, and they don't deserve being treated favorably by Hollywood or by anyone else. They deserve nothing. They deserve nothing. And instead, they're treated better than anyone else in the country. Just insanity. Thank you, PMN. We go now to Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what would cause you to give up hope of peacefully changing society through the electoral ballot?" Unquote. Well, I'm not sure that we still can, but I'm hoping we'll see next year in the presidential election if we can. We've got to try to do it. We don't have a choice. Because people are not going to take up arms and violent revolution. That's not going to happen. So we don't have any, there's no other game in town. It's the only hope we have right now. It's the only hope we have, here and in Israel. People are not going to violently take up arms. The only hope we have of actually replacing the evil leaders we have is through the ballot box. Thank you, Maimonides. We go now to Imaknik, who writes, and I quote, "What are your feelings when you see Jews in Borough Park, Williamsburg, Midwood, Ocean Parkway, Kew Gardens? As PM, would you get these Jews to Israel?" Unquote. PM meaning Prime Minister. I think many of these Jews would move to Israel if we were in power. I do believe that, yes. I think you'd see a population exchange. I think a lot of leftist Jews, gay Jews, self-hating Jews would leave Israel. And I think a lot of the Orthodox and the pro-Israel Jews and the proud Jews would come to Israel. So I think you'd see an exchange of population taking place. I think a lot of these religious Jews would be attracted to an Israel that would become a state where religious Jews would finally be respected and where Judaism and the Torah would be respected. Thank you, Imaknik. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.